Herodotus collects enormous amounts of information. True. Herodotus has a sense that there are proximate and distant events driving historical forces. True. But in the end, he has this large sense of the great issues of history. His younger contemporary, Thucydides, born 460 to 455 BC, dies in 400, knew and admired the work of Herodotus. He even borrowed bits of it in the earliest section of his own work. But he put the writing of history onto a very new path. He wrote of the Peloponnesian Wars. Now, this is the great war between the Peloponnesian League, Sparta and her allies, and the Athenian Empire, Athens and her subjects, that began in 431 BC and carried on intermittently with sort of one end in 411, another in 401, and finally spent itself in the year 400. Thucydides begins his account of this war in good Herodotean fashion back in the 450s. He's really trying to narrate how did this whole thing come about in the first place? How did we get ourselves into this fix? And he thought, well, we've got to go back in time. We have to understand the antecedents of the war. His account, alas, stops abruptly in the year 411. He just didn't finish it. We wish very much that he did. He himself was, again, a highly educated, a widely read person. He was also briefly a general during the Peloponnesian War. So he had the experience, really, of kind of hands-on participation in the life of Athens at this decisive time. So, even though Thucydides' work is incomplete, and as far as we can tell is unrevised, he doesn't seem to have been able to go back and kind of polish it up and tidy it up in the way that one would with something with a long work. His basic working methods are clear. His overall views and intentions are clear. We can see from what we have what he was trying to do. His view of the causes of this war. Again, there are, in his view, certain inevitabilities almost to the struggle, but he says that this war came about because Sparta and its allies were inordinately jealous of Athens, and that Sparta's allies stirred Sparta up finally to start the war. Now, we could go back and look through this period and say that there might be plenty of evidence that we could adduce to suggest that the Athenians actually had generated about as much of this contention as the Spartans ever did. Thucydides creates speeches and puts them in people's mouths. He tells us that he does not have to quote exactly what people said. He must tell what they would have said on such an occasion. And he creates remarkable speeches and puts them into people's mouths. And this is his way. And this, again, is a bit like the theater, because the speeches in Thucydides are not wholly unlike the choruses in Greek dramas. The chorus that turns, as it were, to the audience. They don't really turn at all. But it's as if they turn to the audience and say, "Now, you know what's going on up there, don't you? You know what they're really saying right now, don't you?" There's a certain sense in which Thucydides uses his speeches to accomplish the same kind of thing. You see these public arts and how there is even communication among the art forms? Thucydides is cautious about Athens. He's aware of the problems. He's aware of some of the stupid things that were done, of some of the less able leaders that Athens produced, particularly in the time after Pericles. He had great admiration for Pericles, not much admiration at all for those who came after him. And he felt, basically, that the glories of Periclean Athens were worth plunging into war and were worth all the other costs that Athens had paid to have this brief moment. His funeral oration is his great statement about Athens. Now, the end of the first year of the Peloponnesian War, it was common for the leading public citizen in Athens, Pericles was the person that time, the head of the board of 10 generals, to deliver a public eulogy over those who had died in the previous year's campaigning. Normally, a person on such an occasion would give a speech full of pious platitudes about these nice boys who had lost their lives, sit down, and be quiet. Pericles got up in Thucydides' telling and praised Athens. He praised that for which the boys had died. He spoke of Athens as a school of Hellas. He said, "Everyone admires us. Everyone emulates us. The whole world comes to us, not to other places. Here," he says, "there is a spirit of freedom and openness in inquiry." It's an interesting and remarkable move. And insofar as Thucydides already told us that he's inventing speeches, except insofar as what people would have said, He could have put any words he wanted to in Pericles' mouth. But what he puts into Pericles' mouth is this remarkable speech in favor of Athens, in favor of the cause for which these young men had died. Is Thucydides then somehow a kind of an unvarnished claque for Athens? Is he sort of Athens' great public relations agency? No, not at all. If we call Herodotus the father of history, we call Thucydides the father of scientific history. There is something cool, cold almost, rational, calculating, detached about the way Thucydides can describe what happened in the course of this war. He recognized that war can generate perhaps the greatest stresses of any large-scale process through which a society can go. It can make its citizens savage. It can render the quality of public life coarse. It can make leaders do odd and unpredictable things. His account, for example, of the Mytilene affair is one particularly vivid example of this. Now, the island of Mytilene was over in the Aegean, over near the coast of Ionia. It had long been part of the Athenian Empire. And the Mytileneans wanted to withdraw their allegiance. The Athenian assembly met and had a vote. One of the popular demagogues got up and said, "All right, that's it. Let's kill all the men and we will enslave the women and children." They sent the fleet to execute the charge. The next day, the assembly meets again. Somebody comes in. Cooler heads prevail. They say, "Oh, my heavens, we can't do that." They send a ship to catch the fleet. The ship actually catches the fleet just in the nick of time. And the Mytileneans are spared. But this is Thucydides.